Random House Audio presents Hot House Flower and the Nine Plants of Desire by Margot Berwin. This is Cassandra Campbell. For me, the world is weird because it is stupendous, awesome, mysterious, unfathomable. My interest has been to convince you that you must assume responsibility for being here, in this marvelous world, in this marvelous desert, in this marvelous time. I wanted to convince you that you must learn to make every act count, since you are going to be here for only a short while. In fact, too short for witnessing all the marvels of it. Don Juan in Carlos Castaneda's Journey to Ixtlan. The Nine Plants of Desire. Gloxinia, the mythical plant of love at first sight. Mexican cycad, the plant of immortality, a living dinosaur straight from the Jurassic period. Cacao, the chocolate tree of food and fortune. Moonflower, bringer of fertility and procreation. Cannabis sativa in the form of sensimila, the plant of female sexuality. Lily of the valley, delivers life force. In a pinch, this beautiful plant can replace digitalis as medication for an ailing heart. Mandrake. According to both William Shakespeare and the Holy Bible, this is the plant of magic. Chicory, the plant of freedom, offering invisibility to those who dare to ingest its bitter, milky juice. Datura, the plant of mind travel and high adventure, bringer of visions and dreams of the future. There is a tenth plant, too, the passion plant with no name. To find out about that one, you have to read the book. Part 1. New York City. Bird of Paradise, Strelitzia regini. Native of South Africa, member of the banana family, prized for its tall, highly colored structures. This plant is not for the easily disappointed, impatient, or bossy, as it can take 7 years to produce a single bloom. Perfect for the person who gives and gives without getting anything in return. You know who you are. I inadvertently became interested in tropical plants because that's what the man at the Union Square Green Market sold me. I used to believe that sentence, but now I know better. Now I know that it was meant to be. Here's how it happened. I had just moved to 14th Street and Union Square, into a small, newly renovated studio with absolutely no character. It was a square-shaped box with parquet floors, no molding, no details, white paint, and low ceilings. It was exactly the kind of apartment I wanted. Its newness meant that there were no memories trapped in the walls or the floorboards. No arguments or harrowing scenes of unrequited love staring at me from the bathroom mirror. It was brand new, just like I wanted my life to be. I thought a bit of foliage might spruce the place up, no pun intended, and add some much-needed color. So I walked across the street to the Union Square Green Market to make my purchase. The man at the plant stand was a throwback. He had streaky blonde hair and a dirt-colored tan that came from being outside all the time. In his worn-out flannel shirt and beat-up Timberlands, worn for work, not fashion, he stood out in stark contrast to the manicured metrosexuals perusing the market, wicker baskets in one hand, Gucci sunglasses in the other. This man was different. He was a rugged country sexual. He asked me to describe my apartment not in terms of the square footage or the make of the stove and the fridge, but by the amount of light, temperature, and humidity. I told him that I had floor-to-ceiling windows, which was mostly true, although they were more ceiling-to-heating unit than ceiling-to-floor. I told him that I had an unobstructed south-facing view, hard to find in New York City, and that as long as the sun was shining, it was hot and sunny all day long, even in the winter. I hadn't lived in my apartment through a winter, so I'm not sure why I said that. But I guess it sounded good to me, and also to him, since he bent down amongst his plants, head covered with purple flowers, bud in the air, and emerged with a big smile and a 2-foot-high bunch of leaves. I was disappointed. "What is it?"
"A bird of paradise," he said, holding it up toward the sky and twirling the pot around with his fingertips.
"A tropical plant?" I asked, zipping my coat against the late March wind and picturing its imminent death.
"Hawaiian, to be exact. Strelitzia regini, a member of the banana family. She needs lots of sunlight, not too direct, and let the soil dry out between waterings. She's tough to raise, and she won't flower for 5 or 6 or maybe 7 years, depending on the weather. And the love," he added with a wink.
I unzipped my jacket. 6 or 7 years? My marriage didn't last that long. Do you have anything that flowers sooner, like in a week or two?
"This is the plant for you," he said. "She's a beauty."
"How much?"
$30, and I'll throw in a brochure on rare tropicals so you know how to care for her.
30? I could go to the deli on the corner and get a dozen roses for $10 that have great big sweet-smelling flowers on them right now.
You could, but they'd be dead in a week. You'd have to buy new ones every Saturday. If you do the math, I'm a bargain. And besides, this bird is tropical. Think balmy ocean breezes, swaying palm trees, cabana boys, and piña coladas on white sand beaches near warm, light blue water.
I don't know whether it was the piña coladas, the cabana boys, or the sky blue of his eyes, but as a person who worked in advertising, I had to respect a good sales pitch. I paid him, and he handed me the plant, the brochure on rare tropicals, and his card, which said, "David Exley, Plant Man."
"Sounds like a superhero," I said. "Well, I do have a little something special with the flora and fauna, if you know what I mean."
I didn't, but I nodded anyway.
"Come back if her leaves start turning yellow around the edges. I'm here every Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday from 6 in the morning till 10 at night.
"They better not," I said over my shoulder. "For $30, they better stay bright freaking green." I walked through the market with my bird of paradise held out in front of me like an offering. It felt good to be carrying around a piece of the earth. I thought it made me look like one of those women who cooked satisfying meals on a nightly basis for their Steiner school children while wearing Birkenstocks and reading from the Kabbalah, instead of the single, childless, plantless, divorced 32-year-old woman that I was. Back in my apartment, I set the bird of paradise down on the window ledge. The base of the pot was too wide, and it teetered. I caught my $30 tropical right before it crashed to the floor. Not 5 minutes with me, and its life was already in danger. No surprises there. The bird of paradise was the first living thing I shared space with after my divorce. No pets, no plants, no people, no problems, had been my motto for the past 9 months. I met my ex-husband at work. He was cute and smart and successful, and he was a huge mistake. He was a man who drank like a fish and wanted lots of babies. I was a woman who didn't want lots of babies and drank like a human being. I know that most marriages are complex and multi-layered, but ours was not. Our 4-year marriage went something like this. Year 1, I love you, Lila. Year 2, I love you, Lila. Year 3, I love you, Lila. Year 4, I'm leaving you, Lila, for the producer at the advertising agency. The producer at the advertising agency, a.k.a. the woman who brought him coffee and made his plane reservations. What a cliché. At the time, I wondered how something that sounded so much like a made-for-TV movie could hurt so bad. But in truth, it wasn't the drinking or the producer. The problem with our marriage was genetic. My husband came from a big Irish Catholic family where everyone got married and had kids unless they were gay or terminally ill. I came from a family where no one ever got married unless they had kids first, and usually by accident. My parents, whom I love...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?